before we get going on this week's podcast, I want to take a moment to tell you about something exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest California high school sports news, scores, videos, polls, photos, podcasts, player rankings, and much more. With the SB Live Sports app, it is now even easier to follow your favorite team with real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more. The app delivers all the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's your number one source for California high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Lance Smith, Bodie DeSilva, and me, Connor Morissette. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. Welcome to the SB Live California podcast. I'm your host, Connor Morissette. I'm joined today with a very special guest. We got Aldo Peral, Roosevelt head football coach. Aldo, for the first time in a decade, Roosevelt wins the East LA Classic 22-19 over Garfield. I want to get to all aspects of this game, but first, we're here on a Tuesday. What's your emotional state like after that big win? I'm sure you're still riding high, although you have a pretty big playoff game on Friday. How are you feeling a couple days removed now?
Well, thank you. First off, Connor, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate the opportunity to, you know, just kind of get the word out on what happened over here on the east side.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's an incredible feeling. I have kids. You know, it's amazing. I have a bunch of kids, students on campus, who I have no clue who these young men are. And they have just, out of the blue, come up to me and said, hello, coach. You know, hey, I'm interested in playing football.
Okay.
And I think that's a great thing, you know. So there is definitely a buzz on campus where you have, you know, just a number of kids. I know just on our social media account, we've had, you know, different alumni that have graduated and have moved on who have said, hey, you know what, you know, are you going to be around next season? And if so, you know, what is the process for – you know, my child to attend Roosevelt High School. And so I think that's really cool. They have them at the different charter schools or whatnot. And so Roosevelt is becoming a viable option for these families and for kids here on campus. So I think that's really one of the huge benefits of this game.
And you jump out in the game now to mm-hmm. What was it, 22-0 lead? So 22-0 lead, you end up hanging on 22-19. Again, I wish I could have been there. I was not there. Just describe, I don't think Garfield or even the fans really, based on reading accounts from the game and Garfield's success, really expected that. So you kind of came out and you punched him in the mouth. I'm sure that was part of the game plan. Describe early in that game just what happened to get off to that hot start, because that hasn't been the case for Roosevelt against Garfield in years past. Usually it's Garfield jumping out to the big start. What was different this year?
Well, I think the biggest difference, Connor, was that you know, Garfield's always a good program. You know, they're always a good program. I think this year the kids and the talent level maybe not the same, more, you know, I hate to use the word average, but they're more of a typical, you know, east side team. You know, like I said, they're always well coached, and so I give my respect to Lorenzo and his staff. But at the end of the day, they were a lot like our kids. You know, our kids are, you know, we're pretty much kids from the community. And I think the difference was, you know, the game plan was the same. I mean, there wasn't really anything different, to be honest with you. We came out, we still ran the same pitch play that we always run. But I think what it was that our kids just were able to get it done. And I think Garfield, especially those kids, they really hadn't seen anybody that ran the ball all year. If you look at their schedule, there was no one that was going to put the ball on the ground like we have. And I think that is what made the difference.
Another difference, I think, it seemed like you didn't have to motivate the kids this year. Not that you have to motivate them for an East LA Classic like years past, but the program lost a coach, Coach Dickey, very, very tragically to COVID-19, and the kids were really motivated from that.
they didn't play the game last year. I'm sure having the year off made the kids really motivated, in addition to it being a big rivalry. Did you feel like you had to motivate this group this year, or were they all ready to go just because of the circumstances?
That's an excellent question, Connor. And I believe that the kids were just ready to go. I mean, Dickie was a huge part of our staff and establishing the culture that the kids, were raised in. And at the end of the day, you know, the motivation, there was none needed. I mean, the kids, you know, 10 years in a row, number one, two, losing Dickie, and three, like, these kids legitimately felt that they were the better team. And I, you know, a couple years ago at the last press conference, I had mentioned, you know, and it was, I didn't even remember until someone brought this up, but they said, hey, coach, you did say that, you know, maybe you weren't going to get them this year, but you know, pretty soon you were. And I really believe that. I believe that gap, that talent gap, was going to close to the point where we were going to be able to compete with them. And this year was evident. Actually, last year, I believe we would have got them as well, to be honest with you.
Where does this win rank among the coaching wins in your career, would you say?
By far, it is the most important win in my coaching career, as far as the impact it's going to have, and bringing kids out for football here at Rosebud High School. Although I was coaching Pop Warner 1 year, and we went 0-9, and the last game of the season we tied, and to this day I still believe that was the most important win that I had personally, because the kids picked it up. They picked up the system. They believed. And then the next year, we wound up going to the playoffs with the same group of kids. So that win was very important. But yeah, obviously, the beating Garfield on this level was just incredible. It was just an incredible win, not just for me, but for the community, the alumni, and, of course, the young men that participated in the contest.
What did you make of the crowd on that night? It seemed like there were some concerns going in with the having to get vaccinated or the negative test. The community was decimated very sadly by COVID-19. What kind of crowd would it be? And based on the images that I saw and the reports that I read, it seemed like the crowd was really great. It really helped your group. What did you make of the spectacle of the East LA Classic this year?
I felt that the concern about the attendance was also huge. You know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't think that we were going to have as many folks as we did that evening. I know it's been light lately, and I was talking to one of the financial managers a couple of years ago, and actually after our first year, numbers weren't very good. They were like hovering in the, I think I want to say like 13.5, something around there. And then the next year, because of my big mouth, we got up to, he said that my talking gained us like an extra 1,500 people at the game.
That was one of our most ever to watch YouTube videos, I'll say that.
So that was, you know, that picked up some kids. And I think, you know, I was surprised. I was really surprised. I went out the JV game, and I remember looking up to the stands, and I just felt, because of all the restrictions, what they were requiring kids, you know, folks to attend, I felt that, man, maybe we're not going to have that big of a crowd. But I don't know if you know this or not, but if you've ever been to a Mexican party and they say 6 o'clock, you don't show up at 6. You show up at about 8, 9 o'clock, and that's when the party gets going. And that's what happened. On Friday night, folks began pouring out roughly about, I would say, like right before the game started. And I looked up, and boom, you know, it was just, we had a packed house on both ends of the stadium, and that was beautiful.
You win, students rush the field, which I don't think was allowed, but you can't control crazy kids and crazy alums who wanted to see a win desperately and have it mean so much to them. What did you make of that moment? I'm sure for you that, even though probably shouldn't have been happening, and there were, I think the PA announcer saying, stop, but you can't control kids sometimes. It was pandemonium. That must have been pretty cool for you to see, I'm sure.
It was. Man, Connor, I'll be honest with you. I remember watching college football. I love watching college football, and it happens there regularly, you know. And so to see it happen, literally unfold before your eyes, was beautiful. We were told, at least I had been told by numerous kids, hey, coach, kids are going to rush the field, you know, when we win. And I said, you know what, we'll see what happens. And there's, I don't know if I'm sure a lot of the folks listening to this podcast don't know, but it's like about a 10-foot drop.
Yeah, geez.
It's a 10-foot drop, and there's like three access points that you can get down by stairs. But they had security personnel there, and the kids took it. They made the leap, and they landed. And from what I understand, I think there was only one person that had like a sprained ankle. But other than that, I mean, hundreds of kids literally, you know, took that drop. I was out on midfield, and I saw the kids coming. And my first concern, honestly, was the mixing of the kids with the Garfield kids. And I just didn't want that to happen. I didn't want there to be some kind of incident. So my reaction was, you know, I said, hey, let me go get the trophy. I'm sure that's what everybody wants to see. And I grab it, and I hope I did shake the hand of the gentleman that was there. I don't even know who it was. And if I didn't, I apologize, sir. And, you know, I'm sorry if I didn't shake your hand. But I immediately began walking back to the our side of the field. And sure enough, the kids followed. You know, they followed, and there was little to no mingling at all with the Garfield players. And the fans, of course, you know, erupted with the but it was cool. It was a great experience. I could honestly say probably one of the best experiences of my life. You know, I didn't like the fact that I got whacked by a water cooler.
Yeah.
I got nailed in the head. And, man, that hurt, Connor. It really hurt. I'm not kidding. I thought it was a lid until I saw the video. And I realized it was actually the jug, the lid of the jug. I'm sorry, the edge of the jug just nailed me right in the forehead. And, oh, man, that was painful. That was painful.
I read about that in the LA Times. I'll ask more about that celebration shortly.
Okay.
What do you think it meant for the players, though, to, A, win? I'm sure, you know, it's a monkey off their back. But then to celebrate with their friends, that's – we talk so much during COVID, like, these kids need to play. Mental health is important. And it was so difficult because I believe in vaccines and I believe in, you know, that the – COVID-19 disease is deadly and that we need to be cautious. But I, you know, I found myself being on both sides of the fence because imagine, like, I remember I played soccer. I scored one goal. I was no good, but I scored one goal. I'll never forget scoring one goal. You know, that was one of the highlights of my career. You remember that stuff. So I can't imagine winning an East LA Classic and celebrating with all my friends just because of what this game means. What do you think that moment meant for those players celebrating with their friends and the school? That must have been one in a million for them.
Definitely, definitely. On the bus ride home, the kids were... That's all they could talk about, just the swarming of the field. I mean, that was the topic that we had the whole way back. And, you know, you heard all the things about, like, hey, you know, some of the guys in my first period class were there. I ran into my buddies from, you know, down the street from home. And so you heard so many positive stories from the players. Just, you know, no, and it's funny because I don't think, and I may be wrong, but I don't think there was one player that said he ran into a family member, right? Because, you know, a lot of our family members are a little older and they're not willing to take a 10-foot drop. But their buddies were just there. And I was sharing this with one of my classes, some of the video, and I showed them a clip from Val Vano's win when he was the head coach at NC State and how everybody is just, and he's running around with a chicken, like a chicken without his head.
Didn't know who to hug.
He didn't know who to hug, right? And that's the way it was. It was just, it was this, I can't even describe, honestly, Connor, how incredible that felt. It was just beautiful. And the kids were just, it was cool. It was really cool to share that with your buddies.
And it's always a big game, but it has to be sweeter when it's a 10-year losing streak because, you know, of course, Garfield, every time when they had won, it's a big deal. But ending a 10-game losing streak, that had to feel pretty good too.
Yeah, let me tell you two things about that. Number one, I didn't have to hear that damn song, Volver, Volver, okay? That was the first thing. I didn't have to hear that song. It's a beautiful song, by the way, and I love hearing it in the car, but I definitely don't like hearing it when they play it. So that's number one. I think the second thing is you know, there was a poster that they put up a couple of years ago that said, it's not competition, it's tradition. And, you know, we didn't win that game. We didn't win that game. But that stuck in my mind. It really did, you know, because it became almost a sense of entitlement. It was like a birthright, you know, for lack of a better word. And if we lost... And we lost again, then eventually you would have basically a whole generation of kids from kindergarten all the way to their senior year who had no clue what it was like to beat Garfield. And so that's really what that victory meant. It was like, you know what? There's someone here who's going to compete with you. Now, like I said, Lorenzo's a great coach, and he's going to do well, and he's going to reload next season. But that, you know, we're just trying to send a message, not just to Garfield, but to the city. Hey, Roosevelt football is back, and we're gonna do the best we can to compete with everyone.
Sending a message. Message is sent. You're in the open division playoffs. For Roosevelt, I remember your championship defeat to Locke a few years back. That team wasn't sniffing the open division, even if it was a new playoff format. That would have been a lower-ranked team in the CalPreps rankings. You have to feel a major sense of accomplishment for leading this team, not only to the win, of course, but getting an entrance into the top eight, the open division playoffs. A couple of years ago, Roosevelt in the open division, people would say, what are you talking about? That's not going to happen. How does that accomplishment feel for you?
You know what? That's a great question, Connor. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, folks that are going to listen to this podcast are probably junkies like us, right? They understand football. And that is what I'm most proud of. You know, win, lose, or draw, the fact that we have been able as a staff to take Roosevelt football from where we received it to where it's at, you know, I am very proud of that. We are very proud of that. You know, we're stewards, right? And our job is to not just I think our job is as coaches to leave something better than what you found it in. And I think we have, you know. Now, I don't think I'm going to be leaving the job anytime soon unless our administration thinks otherwise. But that is definitely one of the greatest accomplishments that we have. You know, we've been able to elevate the expectation here at Roosevelt High School, you know. And I was just literally, as I went to the main office, I ran into one of the staff members who's an alum, and he said something that was pretty interesting, right? He says, hey, I know you're going to get them next year as well. And that means a lot, you know, because already there's this expectation like, hey, why can't we beat them again? Why can't we compete at that level, right? And I think that's pretty cool. I think that's pretty cool.
I want to get into the timeline of you taking the job. Was the first year, was that the championship game against Locke?
Correct.
Was that Division II?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so you had that game. And then was it the Division I playoffs the following year?
Correct. Then we played, we wound up losing to Reseda.
Okay, who ended up winning it all, right?
Yeah, and we actually held Reseda to the lowest number of points they had scored all season. So that was pretty cool.
Then, of course, the COVID, nothing happens that year. Or did you play in the...
We played in the spring, but we had a couple of COVID games, yeah, and that was it.
No playoffs. Yeah. You really can't measure success very well with that. And then this year, the Open, so you're right. Leaving it in a better place than when you got there, the ascent is very clear. And now you're playing a power like San Pedro in the first round. It's nice, but it's a bit of a reality check, right? Now, this is going to be a tough week, potentially.
Correct. Yeah. No, Connor, there is no doubt that we are going to have our hands full. Pedro, you know, is a great program. You know, all those Marine League teams are tough. You know, you got Pedro and Banning. They're definitely the powerhouses. But you know, you got Carson. I'm sure eventually they're gonna be up. You know, they'll be back as well. So yeah, we definitely have our hands full with Pedro. You know, we've been watching film, and it's gonna be tough. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, they've got some boys. They have a tradition, and you know, it's dock workers versus factory workers. You know, that's basically what it is. You know, and you know, we're really excited to even you know, just to be out there and play against these that program. I think if everything works for us and we, you know, if, I think we'd have to play a perfect game, and even then, it would be a tough match. It's going to be a tough matchup.
Offensively for them, it's just they can score so quickly, and they have. Great running game, but a great passing game too. And I mean, I'm telling you everything you already know, but just the accomplishment of making it. And for people listening, Roosevelt's the 7 seed and San Pedro is the 2 seed. But the nice thing about your offense is there are some people who love the wing tee, some people who hate it. We'll get into how tough that is sometimes about trying to get kids into that system. But it's a good way to upset teams. We see it happen in college football sometimes. I remember Navy, they run that option, and sometimes they can get the better teams because no matter how hard you prepare for it, it's so different than what you usually see, it can be a challenge. And I'm not saying that's going to happen on Friday. I'm saying it's possible, but if you're trying to pull an upset, it's not a bad system to be running. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. Man for man, we're definitely not. We don't match up. I mean, you and I both know that. We don't match up man for man. Now, the whole purpose of the system is, it gives us an opportunity to grind the clock, right? So we hopefully, if we're able to get the ball going and we're able to move, then we eat up clock, right? So hopefully, if that's the case, then it becomes fewer opportunities for Pedro to have the ball. And if that's the case now, instead of getting, if we were in a spread offense, which everybody thinks, we should be trying to run, but within the spread offense, let's say we go three and out, now Pedro gets it again and again and again. And before you know it, maybe we're down 40-0 at the half, right? This way, maybe they get the ball a couple of times only, right? And now it's maybe 14-0 at the half. And you never know, right? Maybe it's 14-7 and we get the ball back in the second half. Now it's 14-14 and maybe, we do our job and who knows, right? But yeah, Connor, I think that's the advantage of the double wing. It gives you that opportunity to keep a game close. I don't know what's going to happen on Friday, but that's the hope. That's the hope.
Without naming names, how many people tell you to get away from that offense? I'm sure you get a lot of, you got to run the spread offense, like you said. You got to air it out, adapt to what football is today. How challenging is that for you when the proof is in the pudding? You guys have gone up a division every year in the postseason. It's working, but you have people who don't like how you play. How tough is that?
Well, I got folks in my own family that get on me about that. And, it's really difficult. I try my best, Connor. I try my best, and I'm almost 99.9% successful at not reading comments in social media because I already know what's out there. And I'd be an idiot if I read those comments. So the best thing to do is just stay away from them. Most of the folks who see me face to face, they're respectful, and they will, pretty much just keep their ideas to themselves or their comments. And behind my back, I'm sure they're saying whatever they got to say. But at the end of the day, I need to do what is best for Roosevelt football, what is best for our community. And, I've been a teacher here for 30 years. I've been teaching off and on. I mean, I've been coaching off and on for 30 years as well. And, I've seen a lot of folks throw the ball here at Roosevelt. And, as far as I know, no one's gotten to this point. So I'm not saying that, throwing the ball is bad. I just think that at Roosevelt, with the type of athletes that we get, it gives us the best opportunity to succeed, And I'm sure the next guy, whoever that may be, whether it's next season or 10th season, who knows, right? Who knows how long I'll be at Roosevelt. But the one thing I know is that I believe, Don Markham, I still remember Don Markham in that championship game, 94, 95, against La Mirada High School. I'll never forget it. He had about 20-odd kids. La Mirada was stacked. I mean, it looked they had a little small army out there. And, Don Markham went up and down the field and just pounded the heck out of La Mirada. I mean, it was just incredible. And La Mirada was just, they were a throwing team. And I was convinced. I was hooked. I said, That's what we need to do in our community. And, that's what we do. We run the ball. Maybe I shouldn't say what I'm going to say right now, but, I tell the kids, we're going to go and we're just going to pound people. I want every team to know that when Roosevelt comes to your place or you come to Roosevelt, you're going to get your ass kicked physically. Now, maybe the scoreboard may not reflect what is going on, but physically, I want your kids to know they're going to take a beating that day. And I still remember a couple of years ago, we played Inglewood. This is before the new coaches were there. And they were big, man. There were some big kids. And I remember we got to the goal line. We had one of our kids cramped up. So I went out, and it was a tight score. And, you know, all we needed to do was score, and we win the game. And I remember I looked over, and I saw these, they're huge. These kids were big. And, you know, I mean, we were talking about 6'2", 6'3", across the board. And I had my little Mexican kids. And I just looked at their faces. And I'll never forget, man, those Inglewood kids were beat. I mean, they just knew they had gotten an ass whooping. And they knew. The worst part was they knew we were going to just run the ball. Same damn play. We're going to run it down their throat. And we did. And we scored. It almost felt like those kids were just grateful that the game was over, you know, just from the beating they took. And so I think that's important. It's important that you know, if you know what's going to come, you know, just having that aura is important.
Did you learn that system after watching that championship game in the 90s? Just describe the history that you have with this. I'm sure you know it like the back of your hand now, but how did you learn about the double wing? And then I'm sure you're now really comfortable installing it, but mm-hmm. just talk to me about the history you have with this style of play.
Sure. It started actually in Pop Warner. Okay. I was coaching high school ball at the time, and I was also coaching youth football. There's an organization called the Boyle Heights Wolfpack, and we actually used to play in the old King Conference. And I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, Connor, but the current youth, the current Snoop League is pretty much an alteration of what was the King Conference. We used to play Long Beach Poly. We had Crenshaw. We had pretty much all the teams in South Valley. We were the only team that was brown. You know, the kids would make fun of us and call us the soccer club. Here comes the soccer club, right? And they, you know, and so we were getting drilled, you know, 50 to nothing, you know. I mean, it was bad. I mean, and it was that was the norm. And then a couple of guys went over to Don Markham's house. Markham had like a clinic in his garage. And so they picked it up. They got all the material. And there was a couple of videotapes as well. I think someone still has one of those original videotapes. And, you know, they came back and there's a buddy of ours. His name is Nisam Leon. And Nisam is the founder of the Wolfpack. And he was one of the head coaches at the time. And he's like, here, this is what we have. We started looking at it and we started breaking it down and then little by little we started running it and you know over the years you know we ran it. As a matter of fact, when we got to Roosevelt, when I got the job, we ran it. We dedicated 100%. And since we started to now, 4 years later, it's different. You know, I mean, it's still essentially the same system. But there are so many changes that we have made that if I had known, I know this for a fact, if I had known when we played Locke, what I know today, there's no question we beat Locke. If I had known what I know today, there's no question that we beat Reseda.
So what's different today?
I think a lot of the adjustments that we've made, we've learned to change. The plays are essentially the same, but it's the technique that we've been able to adjust. There's the adjustments. I mean, there's just literally teams running certain plays against us or just the way they run a certain defense and the way the ends maybe attack us or that backer fails or maybe the D tackle, like guys cutting us and stuff like that. Like now there are adjustments. You know, I did a terrible job on Friday because we jumped out to a 22-0 lead. I mean, there was really nothing he could do. I mean, we were just getting pounded. He makes his adjustments. We come out in the second half, and on a couple of drives, actually, I think we had about 5 or 6 drives, and on 2 of the drives, he legitimately stopped us. He legitimately stopped, like, we were stuffed. But on the other 4 of the 6 drives, we killed ourselves. You know, we had an offsides, we had a missed block. I mean, there was just a lot of miscues that the kids had. And, you know, at the end we had a punt, you know, which is something we normally don't do. But I think that's the difference. Like the kids know it. You know, this, as a matter of fact, this class right here is our first class. These are the kids that we've had for 4 years. So these kids literally coach them. They make in-game adjustments, which is pretty cool. You know, when they come off the field, you know, we watch our video, we watch our iPad and we look and see what's going on. And I'll ask the kid, you know, and a lot of times kids will tell me, hey, coach, this is what we think we should be doing. What do you think? So that's pretty cool when you have kids coaching themselves. That's pretty neat.
I'm sure over the years there's been a kid who said, I'd rather go to a spread offense. I don't want to go here. You mentioned earlier how winning this year's East LA Classic is going to be really helpful in getting kids out and coming to play in the program. You might be a biased voice, but do you think winning the East LA Classic is, you know, going to help more than running this style of offense hurts in terms of getting kids to come out and play? Do you think you're going to have a revitalized program because of this after this year?
I think so, Connor. I think kids are going to see us as a school that could win. You know what I mean? And that's huge. I mean, we're on the east side from all the high schools that are out here. And with all due respect to Lincoln, Wilson, Franklin, HP, Southgate, Bell, all these programs out here, right? And, yeah, you have the neighboring schools. You have Montebello, sure, you know, some of the parochial schools, Salesian and Cantwell. We're still, right? Even Roosevelt down is still a bigger draw than any of those programs. Now, those coaches are not going to like what I'm saying, but that's the truth. I get more fans at a JV game than some of the varsity programs that these schools receive. And that's the reality, right? So I believe that Roosevelt winning is going to pick up. Maybe we're not going to get droves, obviously. I mean, I hope they do. But I really believe that there'll be a kid here, a kid there, a kid there. And it's not just going to be a kid who is not familiar with football that's going to come. We're going to get that athlete that's going to say, you know what, maybe I want to come to Roosevelt's magnet program, you know, and I want to get there and I want to be part of that. So I really genuinely believe that we are going to get interest. As a matter of fact, I know, just talking to our magnet coordinator, that more and more kids this past year were asking about football. Like, how do I play football? How do I get in contact with the, you know, with the football program? And so we know that there's already been an uptick in that, and I believe that this is definitely going to put us in. And, you know, it doesn't help that you're getting a $200 million makeover, right, with all these new buildings and sports facilities. So I believe that, you know, things are going to go – there's a lot of things going in our favor. So we just need to continue doing what we are doing.
What are your thoughts on the CalPREPS rankings where – maybe there's a change here or there, but by and large, you're ranking what the formula spits out is where you're going to be in the playoffs. Because I think if they hadn't instituted the no division rule, you're probably still in Division II, and mm-hmm. you're probably a favorite in Division II this year. So not only do you win the East LA Classic, but you'd have a great shot at a city title. This year, it's much tougher. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on these playoffs? Because I feel like you're in a disadvantaged position, but overall, I have to say, I do like how it works. What are your thoughts?
Well, one of the things I really like about the CalPREP system is that you know where you're at and you go.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple, right? And it really encourages programs to schedule better quality teams, and which is what I did. You know, our first game was against Maces. Now, Maces was actually just a fill-in. The squad that we were supposed to play was Carson High School. But I got a call at 8:30 that Friday morning, literally, 8:30 in the morning, Coach Christensen calls me up and he's like, hey, coach, we got hit with COVID. And so we were scrambling for a game, and luckily Maces was available. But after that, you know, we had Dorsey, Crenshaw, right? Lincoln, you know, we knew from the spring season that they had a good squad. So, you know, we picked them up. But I think that's what the CalPREP ranking system does, right? If you want to succeed and you want to compete at the highest level, then you need to be very mindful, right? You can't, you know, pick up a bunch of cupcakes, right? And expect to be, and there's coaches. I know I heard talk from a couple of coaches who, actually I shouldn't say a couple of head coaches, but a couple of assistant coaches who said that, you know, maybe not playing a kid who was injured, right, would be a positive thing, because maybe there wasn't really that impulse to win that game, right? Because then that would mean that they would have to, you know, bump up in the system. And I told everybody, I mean, my staff knows, the kids knew, like, hey, I didn't care. if we wound up in the top eight. You know what I mean? Like that was, that's what you want. I think anybody around the city, they could say whatever they want about what Roosevelt football. But the one thing they will say is, hey, that guy has done something right. That staff has done something right because they inherited something that maybe wasn't as well as it is today. So Cal Preps, I think, is good overall. I do see why people would be upset, you know, because maybe they're being put too high, right? I know one coach in particular who was he definitely was, and I'll say the word, he said he was fearful. He was scared that the Cal Prep system was ranking him too high.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, bro, just play, man. Just play. Like that's, I mean, don't you want to play against the, but he wants a ring. You know, we all want a ring, mm-hmm. but I don't know, Connor. I mean, I wasn't a very good athlete like you. You know, I wasn't a very good athlete.
Me neither.
But that didn't mean that I was going to, I mean, there was the center at the time was a guy named Eddie Mendel. And I knew he was going to be the center. The guy was like about 6'1", 6'2", you know, weighed about 50, 60 pounds more than me. But every day that was my game. And every day at practice, I would work hard to kick Eddie's ass, you know, and that was it. That was my job. My job was to compete against the best guy. And, you know, Eddie would always tell me, come on, Aldo, be easy today. You know, give me a break, whatever. I think that's what Cal Preps is going to do. And the coaches that want to rise are going to, you know, schedule their schedules and, you know, be mindful of that. And those that just want to kind of hide out in the bottom, that's fine too. You know, that's fine too. So I don't know. I think at the end of the day, Cal Preps is a pretty good. I wish, you know what I do wish though, Connor? I do wish that the Cal Preps algorithm was more transparent.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew, right? I think most of us kind of have the general idea of what it's about, but I really believe that Cal Preps needs to be more transparent about what it is that they, because literally between Garfield and us, it was like 0.4 was the difference. So I'd like to know what was that 0.4, you know, that's all. I'm just kind of curious, you know, not because I disagree, but just let us as coaches know. So we kind of have, so we can prepare accordingly.
That is the one big critique. And earlier I said you might have been Division II this year. Mm-hmm. You had been Division I in 2019. Mm-hmm. So you, honestly, if it was the old system, probably still would have been in the open. So I want to correct myself with that. But say you had been a Division II, then mm-hmm. the point would have been different. But got that one wrong, so I wanted to make up for that. Aldo, can you speak to, I know San Pedro, and it's about you guys getting buses. You're trying to play mm-hmm. at 7 with the vaccine mandate. It's tough to get buses. You'll have to charter the buses because LAUSD bus drivers can only take you guys to play at 4.
Correct.
It's early in the week. I know we spoke off the record and you don't have an update right now, but could you just give the people an update and explain how you're trying to play the game at 7?
Sure. You know, the district, because of the resources that it has available, the best accommodation at this point is going to be a 4 o'clock game. So, Pedro has reached out. They've asked us to see if we can get out there and play at 7. And we are doing everything within our power to get the, you know, since the bus will not be paid for by the district, that means the school mm-hmm. has to find the funds in order to contract the charter bus to get us out there. So our principal and I are going to have a conversation about that. And I feel very comfortable that we will be able to secure the monies for that. But I can't say definite because it is not final. But I will say that the district is doing a great job as far as trying to get folks to different games. You know, it's not what we're used to, obviously, you know, having a 4 o'clock game. But at the end of the day, you know, this whole season has been one that we're not used to, you know. So that's pretty much that.
And adding to that, there's now a vaccine mandate for athletes that's gone on into full effect. So if you haven't gotten both shots, you cannot play anymore as of, was that this week or last week?
That was as of Friday.
Yeah, so
as of Friday.
So as of Friday. How has that affected Roosevelt? Obviously, I'm not asking you to name names, you lost some players?
No, actually, we've been pretty good. We've had, I think we had one kid who had to vaccinate on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken, he vaccinated Saturday, so he's good to go. But we're fine as far as everyone being vaccinated. You know, grades also was an issue, and we had to ease up. Actually, we had to ease up on some of our practice hours because we wanted kids to get those final opportunities with their teachers to get their grades up. And but no, overall, we've been pretty fortunate as far as the vaccine requirement. It is tough. I'm not going to lie. We had one JV kid who basically said, you know what? The family said, no, we're not going to vaccinate. And, you know, that unfortunately cost the young man the opportunity to continue playing. And I felt bad. I felt bad for the kid. You know, I felt bad, and I'll tell you why, Connor. He felt bad because he wanted to vaccinate, but I believe it was for the wrong reason. He told me he wanted to vaccinate so he could play football, right? And I had to tell him, mijo, you know, I want you to vaccinate. You know what I mean? You're gonna play ball for us in the future. But you have to respect what your family says, you know? And at the end of the day, you need to understand that your parents want what's best for you. Now, whether we agree philosophically or not, that is not the issue. The issue is your parents are making a call, and you need to respect that. And so, you know, I felt bad for him. I felt really bad for him because something that he really loves is, you know, he's not going to be able to do. So,
yeah. So does he now... You have to get vaccinated eventually to come to school, but as he can still come to school until...
Correct.
December, but eventually, is he going to have to switch schools, or is he going to, a kid in his situation, going to be online only? Are they still offering online only for someone in that spot? And if you don't know, it's okay. But I imagine if you don't get the shot, you might have to end up transferring, right?
Yeah, more than likely, what's going to wind up happening is he'll probably be in that online school.
Okay.
And then I don't know what's going to happen come, you know, next September, right? I mean, if we're lucky, numbers are like minimal, and, you know, we probably, but. It sure feels like, you know, that's just going to be the way it is. You're going to have to be vaccinated. I mean, how, you know, we got polio shots. We got all these, you know, measles shots and whatnot. So I think it's just going to be a way of life, whether we like it or not. And so this young man and his family, more importantly, right, they're really going to have to make a decision. So I have not had a conversation with the family lately. We had one early in the season when the vaccine requirement was announced. But, you know, I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen, Connor.
I do feel for that kid. Hopefully things end up working for him. But who knows? I got two final questions for you, Aldo. First, I remember we spoke in the heat of the pandemic, and we had a couple conversations, and you just described to me how the online school, it was really challenging, and it was really tough as a coach and as a teacher just to connect with these kids. And
yes.
Some kids even ended up getting jobs, and it was tough in the spring to try to get them to come out and play football. Mm-hmm. Now, here we are months and almost a year removed from some of those conversations. How would you say COVID-19 has affected your team this season from a perspective of it was dire, you weren't playing at all, now you are playing, it clearly has gotten better, but are you still dealing with it on a day-to-day basis? Do you still, if it hadn't happened, do you think like, are your numbers still majorly affected? Do you think, of course, if COVID hadn't happened, your team would be in a better position, but are you fully past where you were when it was really awful and you struggled to connect with kids? Just update me on now it's November, whatever it is, late in 2021. What would you say the COVID situation is with this group? Because it seems like as a country, we're getting better. It's still not over. But we're in a much better position than we were. Is that the same for your football team, or is it still a challenge every day?
Well, I think we're definitely better than where we were a year ago. I mean, that hands down we are. Where we could be potentially, no. We're far from that. I would probably argue that we're probably at about 70 to 80% of where we could be. There is a daily concern. Like, I mean, I'm scared when there's this one administrator who's in charge of getting the information about, you know, who's been affected by COVID or not. And, you know, when I see that administrator, I almost want to turn around and walk away from them because I'm scared they're going to give me bad news about, you know, hey, Aldo, you know, one of your kids was exposed, or, you know, hey, coach, this and that. So that's a concern. The other concern also is even when, like, a student comes in and says, you know, I'm here to summon someone, right? I'm scared because that kid could be potentially bringing a kid out that has been exposed to COVID or is affected by COVID, right? So, you know, that is a reality that we're dealing with, and it's still, you know, on my mind. I'm not going to lie to you and say it's at the forefront, because it isn't. We've pretty much assumed we're going to play. And I think that's a big change, yeah, right, from the beginning of the season to now. Now it's almost like, wow, really? They were affected by – I mean, it's more like kind of like an oddity, right? But mm-hmm. It still happens, you know, and people kind of say, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, there's COVID. But I think overall the true effect is economically, right? You know, we live in a pretty tough socioeconomic community. We're not, you know, on the high end of that scale. So – I don't know. And that's where I said 70-80%, because I really don't know how many kids truly wanted to play ball but couldn't because of economics, right? Maybe they and that's a population. I don't know. But we're at 55, right? And I know the rest of the league, you know, so there were still some schools that did not field the JV squad, right? They had freshmen playing varsity football, you know? So that tells me that I think once the JV rosters are fully complete, I think that's when you can say, hey, you know, we're good. But right now you have some communities where there is JV football, and then there's others that don't. And then even if you look at the varsity rosters, like, and I'm thinking of HP, I think Saul has something like, I don't know, I mean, I think he's shy of 30,
yeah,
you know, and so – and that's a varsity roster, right? You know,
now they've had some big wins.
Yeah, they've had some huge ones. Hell, they beat Garfield, right? And Saul, by the way, is a Roosevelt guy.
Okay.
Roosevelt. So two Roosevelt guys beat Lorenzo this year, who is an HP guy himself.
Yes.
But like I said, I think it's a I think it's still on our mind, obviously.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Hopefully things continue. Like you said a moment ago, the numbers are down overall, and hopefully they continue to do so.
Final question. Sure. I want to get you out of here with this. So, of course, Garfield makes the furious comeback. They switch the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. It sounded like they even stopped you a couple times before you had the situations where your guys beat themselves. But it all comes down to a kick. Garfield misses the kick, and you hang on, snap the 10-year streak. In that moment, no good, clock strike zero. What's going through your mind right at that moment? Do you remember? Did you black out? Just take me through that.
Can I cuss or no?
Sure.
All right. I remember saying, I can't fucking believe we got this, right? And the ball, you know, the kid kicks it, and it you know, he shanks it to the left. And it was funny because, you know, I don't know. I don't want to put, like, a lot of deep meaning into this, but maybe it does mean something. I do know that the area that that ball lands in is in the direction of where Dickie used to hang out. He's, you know, Dickie would hang out on that part of the field. And the ball, you know, so we kind of jokingly would say, you know, Dickie pushed it, right? So I'm trying to help the kid out. I mean, I felt bad for the kid. I really did.
Of course.
You know, I felt terrible for the kid. I remember the Canoga Park kid. Same thing happened. You know, we were up by a couple of points against Canoga a few years back in the semis, and that kid kicks it, and he's short, right? You know, it was dead on, but it was just short. So my first thought was just like, you know, I can't believe we fucking won this game. And more importantly, like, you know, my next thought is like, I hope that kid's going to be okay. You know, I really hope that kid's okay. You know, but it's a big relief. You know, it was a huge, huge relief. I go back, Connor, to the idea of double wing, right? Like I know what we're doing is right. I know what we're doing is right. I mean, it's right for our – and I don't want those little receivers. I want those big, fat guys. That's what I want. You know what I mean? Like, I want big, fat guys, you know. And I'll tell you just a real quick story. There was a kid. He played quarterback for me last year. His name was Damian Avalos. And this guy, man, I remember his freshman year. He was just – it was practice. He was just throwing the ball, right? And I kid you not, God kissed his arm because this kid could launch it, right? He you know, but unfortunately, you know, we get in play because of the COVID season, the spring season. But he, I told him his 10th grade year, I go, mijo, you got to transfer. And he looked at me like I was a nut. His mom's an alum. His dad's an alum, right? And he looked at me like I was nuts. And I told him, we're not going to throw the ball, Mijo. You better transfer, bro. You know, and Damian just looked at me. Damian Alvarez looked at me. As a matter of fact, he was featured in a story with the Times. Mm-hmm. And Damian's like, nah, coach, I'm a Roosevelt guy. You know, I got to stay. And I said, okay, well, just understand, you're going to block. You know, you're going to block. You're going to be a blocking quarterback. You know, I'll throw a little bit more because I have you. You know, and he just looked at me. He's like, all right, I'll do what you want me to do. You know, and I think that says a lot about the type of kid we want. You know, we want kids that think we, not me. And when we goof around, even when we go on the 7-on-7s, Connor, I swear to God, when we go to those 7-on-7s, I hear so much bickering from the kids about, you didn't throw me the ball. I was open. You know, what's wrong with you? Didn't you see me? I mean, there's just so much negativity, right? And when we run it, maybe they're too tired. I don't know. But I've never heard anyone. To this day, I have not heard one kid complain about anything. Because they know you got to block if you're going to get the ball. You know, and these guys, there's a young man that played for us, number 44, Santos Rivera. And Santos took pride in punishing kids with his block. He was a wing guy, and he loved blocking guys. And, you know, and the other kids we would make fun of them. All the kids that ran the ball, we'd make fun of them. And we would be like, that's not what you want to do. You want to block. So I'd like to think my goal is to have 10 linemen out there, right? And one guy that could run. And if we can get 11, I'm good with that.
Amazing. The kids know what they're signing up for. That's Aldo Peral, the head coach of Roosevelt, has a big game on the road against San Pedro in the Open Division playoffs on Friday. Aldo, thank you so much. This is a real joy. I had a blast doing this. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Connor. I really appreciate you being out here.